Good morning, sisters, brothers, and siblings, and welcome to Unifor Local 636 very first podcast. In order to gain some history and knowledge of where we come from, where we are, and where we're going. So today I'm very, very honored to have with me a dear and close friend of mine by the name of Brother Gary Moon. I have met Gary and was fortunate enough to meet Gary 31 years ago at my own workplace at the old Standard Tube, which is now called ArcelorMittal. Welcome to the podcast, Brother Moon.
Thank you.
Introduce yourself and give the members a little bit of history about you, please, Gary.
Okay, my name is Gary Moon. I've been a member of this local for 55 years. I started in 1970 at Standard Tube, which is now ArcelorMittal. Retired in on early retirement 203. Been a board member since 1987 in one capacity or another, and now I'm the retirees liaison.
Very good, and thank you for joining us today. You know, this is just going to be a general conversation, Gary, in order to see if we can pick your brain at some history of where we all started. So back when you started Unifor Local 636, I believe it was UAW 636, was it not?
Yes, it was. It was United Workers until 1985, and it became the CAW. And then I believe in 2013, we became Unifor.
Very good. Back in when you joined Local 636 under UAW, who was the sitting president nationally?
Sitting president nationally was the nationally was at that time Doug Fraser is the one that took over. I'm trying to think the other fellow's name because I went to that convention in 1977 in Los Angeles, California, when Doug Fraser took over as the national president of the union. Our Canadian director was Dennis McDermott, and his assistant was Bob White.
So when we were UAW, people from Canada went all over to Constitution conventions and just area conventions. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, well, we have every 3 years we'd go to the national convention that would be in the U.S. And then during the rest of the time, we'd have area councils out of Toronto or held in Port Elgin at the old education center 3 times a year.
Very good. And do you remember who the president of the UAW here at local was?
Was at the local at the time?
Yeah.
Was a fellow by the name of Noel Stoodley.
Noel Stoodley. He'd come from Standard Tube as well, did he not?
Yes. He was the plant chair, the president of the local, and he was a mentor for me there getting involved in the union.
Very good. You've been a mentor for me for many years as well, and I appreciate and respect that, and I thank you very much. So when did Bob White, because Bob White split to the UAW, from the UAW to the CAW, can you tell the members how we became CAW?
That happened back in 1985 in negotiations when we were hit with the concessionary stuff here in Canada, and the U.S. was trying to dictate to that's how we were going to negotiate at the table, and that became a big fiasco to the point that there was an emergency call for all the delegates to get together and talk about the reasons why we needed to pull away and become a separate union.
So can you explain to some of these members that might not know what the benefits were from breaking away from the UAW and becoming our own union here in Canada?
Well, one of them was to have our own autonomy. We've always... things have been different as far as how you worked in the auto industry or anywhere else in the union in Canada versus the U.S. And it gave us an opportunity to, you know, do our own plate as to where we wanted to go.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up because this year is also a Constitution Convention. So what would the difference be from a Constitution Convention as a UAW to CAW? And I mean, would it be the same as a CAW as it is in Unifor today?
No. Back when it was the UAW, you hardly got an opportunity to speak because you're only just from the Canadian contingent. The U.S. controlled everything that went on. You know, you very seldom even got an opportunity to get to the mic to question anything or give any opinion of what was transpiring during the convention.
So Bob White splitting it into a CAW, I think, is better for all Canadians across our entire country?
It most certainly has been. It's one of the greatest things that ever happened. I'm glad he had that foresight to bring it forward. And then, you know, we just have to continue to strive forward the way we are. You know, if you don't remember where you came from and where you are today, you never know where you're going in the future.
Okay, so we've talked about the UAW breaking into the CAW and us now being Unifor. Tell me, Gary, whatever got you remotely close to being getting involved with unions and becoming a leader and getting involved to become even elected representatives in your workplace and the local? Like, what brought you to support unions?
Well, one of the things every night at the dinner table as a kid, all I ever heard was from my dad, who was the president of the Printers and Lithographers Union at Somerville Industries in London, about all the issues that went on and now to stand up for your own rights and health and safety, working conditions, and the fact that, you know, you're the one that was making the money for the bosses and that they need to learn that they just couldn't shove you around the way they have in the past. And that's how things happened. And when I got into Standard Tube, I was only there a year and I became a off-shift steward because I didn't like the way we were being treated by some of the supervision in the weld shop. And then 3 years later, I became the full-time steward, not off-shift steward, but a full-time steward. And I was also the chair of the stewards committee in the plant. And we used to meet quarterly on a Saturday morning at the union hall and go through issues at the plant. And then I got to the point there when we were on strike in 1975, I said, that's it, this is over, I'm running for the executive. I've had enough of this nonsense that's going on. And I got elected in 1975 and I was on the executive from there, either as the vice chair or the chair from 75 until 1999 when I lost my one and only election. And I said, after that, I was just going to step aside. And then everybody came to me after 3 months and said, how can we get rid of that other guy? Because we made a mistake. And I said, well, you've got him for 3 years. And 3 years later, they hounded me and hounded me to get back on the bargaining committee. And I was there until 2003 when the company went into receivership. And I was a part of bargaining that agreement in 2003, which gave an opportunity for people like myself and anybody else that was 57 and up at that time to go out and retire with some pride.
It's funny that you say that because I remember in 1994 on September 6th, it was my first day at Standard Tube, and this guy comes walking up to me and he says, hey, I'm Gary Moon, I'm your union rep. And back in 1994, I'm like, yeah, so? And ever since then, Gary's taken me under his wing, and here, and fortunate for me, I've been able to be the president of Unifor Local 636 since 2017. But yeah, there's a lot of history with this guy here, I'm not going to lie to you. Gary, so who really was it that drove you to get involved? Was it mom and dad sitting around the supper table? Did you have somebody that in a workplace that kind of took you under your wing or under their wing like you did myself?
Well, what happened to me is, and I'll go back even further than what I talked about. In 1963, at 18 years of age, I became a UAW member working at a place called Kelvinator in London. And I worked there in a weld shop. And in 1968, well, actually, and I think it was in 66, it was sold out to White Consolidated of the U.S. And they said that they were not going to close. They're going to keep it in Canada. There was 2,000 odd people worked there between the staff, sales and production. And we went on vacation in that summer of 1968. And we come back and the place was padlocked up. And this is after the Ontario and provincial government gave $62.5 million to this corporation to refurbish it, which they never put money into it. It ticked me off to the point that I moved around from a couple different jobs. I ended up working at Ingersoll Machine as a welder at over there. And then when I got an opportunity to get into the tube, I thought to myself, I'm going to stick up for my rights and my brother's rights. And that's when I got involved in the union. And I was even pushed further to get involved by Noel Stubio, who I said mentored myself and Jim Farrell and a couple other people as young guys to get involved. And that's where I strived on forward.
So Bob White comes from Local 636. What was your relationship with Bob White? How well did you know him? Did you ever get the chance to work with him? So on and so forth.
I never got a chance to work with him, but I had lots of discussions with him, both when he showed up at the hall here later in life, but also I used to run into him quite often when I would be at the Education Center in Port Elgin and have talks. My first big thing with Bob was in 77 when we were in California. That's the first I really got to know what he was all about. I'd heard about him for a long time, but I never really had any conversations with him up until that point in time.
Well, when I speak of Bob White, I always speak of him as one of my personal idols, because I've read his books, and I was blessed enough to be able to meet him and consider him a friend for many years. So what do you think some of Bob White's biggest accomplishments were outside of splitting from the UAW to the CAW? Like, I mean, you mentioned Port Elgin a couple of times, and I mean, we're just talking off the cuff here, but you mentioned the Education Center. It's rumored, and factual rumored, I guess, so it's not really rumored, but that we wouldn't have an education center here in Canada at Port Elgin if it wasn't for Bob White. Is that true?
I believe that's true. I said, back in the day, him and Dennis McDermott were a part of buying up the camp that was there. It was a church camp, and there was cabins and everything when it first started up. And then they turned it over into the education center, and, you know, it really moved forward. He's seen the foresight on educating the members in order to move on as in the labor movement with all the different issues that were going on, whether it be to do with WSIB, bargaining, health benefits, whatever it may be. It was something that would move everybody forward by getting educated through there.
But yeah, Bob White was always really big on educating, and he was also big on inclusion. He always wanted to have more members and as many members as he could, always involved. Why do you think Bob would want to educate so many people? I know we can't speak for him, but just between us, right? Like, wow. I mean, I think he wanted to educate because I think Bob was pretty passionate personally in his passion to make sure people that are in the know of things are more involved with things. Would you say that's fair?
Well, that's fair. And I mean, and the thing is, he was a very caring individual. You know, I mean, he not just as a leader, you would think that sometimes leaders, they only look after things that pertain to them. He was always involved worrying about how your family was and how to get people educated on the basis that there's a lot of things in the movement in the labor that have to be dealt with in the future. And if you haven't got the people educated to move on, it's like I said before, if you don't know your past and you know what you did right now, then you don't know where you're going in the future. And that's where he was trying to drive it forward, and it installed in my head and a lot of other people that's why you got to get involved. And that's why now, after 55 years, I still sit around at the local on the executive board trying to support the workers and in every issue that I can.
Very good. Yeah, so, I mean, we could sit here and talk about Bob White all day long. Like, he was a great impact to unions and everything else that we could possibly do, right? So, personally, what are some of your biggest achievements in your workplace? Like, let's go back to Standard Tube, and we'll just start from there. Okay. Some of your biggest achievements. What were some of your biggest bargaining achievements that were for the betterment of all working?
Well, number one was correcting some of the working conditions, because when I first started there as a welder, you could cut the air with smoke. The exhaust systems were very bad and everything. We worked on all that kind of stuff. And then when we got into negotiations, we dealt with such things as legal services. We followed, one of the biggest things that Jim Farrell and myself as the chair or vice chair, whichever capacity we were in, we always followed the big three negotiations. They were up in September. Ours at that time used to come up in January, whatever the big three went after, because we were one of the biggest producers in the auto parts industry, that we would follow it. So we got into legal services, we had into index pension. And then one of the other things we always did is we looked after getting a continuation of health benefits when you retired. We've sat there through many a threat of plant closures and said, well, then maybe we're here bargaining the wrong thing. Maybe we should be talking about a closeout agreement. Then the company would start to turn their tail and go the other way. And the final, one of the biggest things that happened in my final time at the plant before I retired was we were sitting in negotiations. And after a week, we all of a sudden were sitting there with pinstripe suit people across the table that are from GE Capital Finance, because our parent company, LTV Steel, in the U.S. had only owned us for 362 days and filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And so now we're dealing with different people. And they said they were only worried about the Canadian plants and two operations in Ohio. And how come you guys that are here that are over 55, like, and so on, with 30 years aren't retiring? I said, well, because you don't. The whole deal is you don't give us the same opportunity you give to your staff people. And this one lawyer says, well, what's that? And I said, some staff people, you give them an opportunity a year ago. And I said, you picked up the early Canada pension until they're able to draw it out of the normal time.
We had a time.
They gave you the supplemental bridge that they were able to get. That was put forward from an early age until they could start to draw it out of the pension fund. And I said, we need to get some decent increase in the pension across the board. And I said, if you want that, that's what you got to do. And they said, well, we want to keep the younger generation. We're trying to keep this place together before we sell it off. And, we'll take a look at it. Then they came back to us a couple of days later and said, we can agree to the things you're talking about. And I said, well, there's only one other thing we forgot to deal with. And they said, what's that? And I said, you want to get rid of us older guys? We have a bunch of people that came from the Kelsey Foundry, Thomas Bus, Fruhoff and Ingersoll, et cetera, that are already 60 or over that will never get the 30 years. There's no opportunity for them to go. And they came back a day later and said, how's a $10,000 RSP for those people? And we said we'd take it. One other final thing that I overlooked, but I will bring up to, is back in the 90s, we took a 15-month extension. And one of the things we put to the company's head was, they said they were going to hire 80, which they ended up hiring 300. They were going to spend $7 million in upgrades. And we said, it won't cost you nothing on this extension unless there's a layoff. If there's a layoff, the layoff workers will get full benefits, including the SUB plan, for the time that they're laid off. And the final thing we want out of you guys is that all those people that have stayed here through many layoffs that never even got a full year's credits, at the time of their retirement, the company would agree to make their pension whole. We understand that if they died before they retired, then their surviving spouse would only get the actual accrued years at that point in time. And they ended up agreeing to it. We came up with a list of a number of employees that had either previously worked there or had stuck through the layoffs, that their years could be brought together to accumulate 30 years of service. So that was one of the other big things that we did.
Very good. I think we need to take a little bit of a break here. So
did I talk too much?
No.